And what we're doing is we're moving into, we're going to spend 1 or 2 weeks looking at TCP, the Transmission Control Protocol, but moving into the details of how that works. Because most of you have been exposed to TCP in a previous course and understand it's a transport protocol. We'll recap on some of the basics and then go into some details about its performance. So we'll have a review of TCP, and I'll actually move from these slides back to another set of slides that you may have seen before. The review of TCP is going to lead us to the focus on congestion control, which is what happens when, in the internet, there's congestion. When there's a lot of people trying to send data, but as a result, too many people are trying to send data, that we start to lose some data, and how do applications respond to such congestion? And the major response comes from TCP. So we'll explain how TCP works with congestion control. So this is a lot of, or the details will go into a lot about the performance of TCP. And we'll explain that TCP is the most commonly used transport protocol in the internet. When you're web browsing, when you're downloading files, when you're sending emails, peer-to-peer applications, even some multimedia applications use TCP as a transport protocol. That is, we're using it every day. And it impacts on performance a lot. So we'll explain what are the performance issues. But first, really, a review of what is TCP. It's the Transmission Control Protocol, most commonly used transport protocol today. There are two original transport protocols, TCP and UDP. But there are several others as well, SCTP, DCCP. But the two main ones are TCP and UDP. And recall the transport layer if we look at a 5-layer stack if we consider our 5 layers, we have our data link layer and physical layer about getting data across links, the network layer, IP, the internet protocol, about getting data across a network. But we know IP has no reliability. We just send an IP datagram. It's more about forwarding that datagram and routing. If we send an IP datagram from my laptop to a server in the US, there's no guarantee that it will be delivered. There may be an error in the network and it gets lost. We know that the role of TCP is to provide guarantees of delivery such that for my applications when I need guaranteed delivery, I will use TCP, which is a transport protocol. Above that, we have protocols specific to applications. HTTP is an example. That's a protocol that supports web browsing applications. There are other protocols to support email applications, peer-to-peer applications, voice applications. They are application-specific protocols. And up here we have the applications themselves and the users. We're focusing on this part about having a connection between one application on the internet and another application. So if we have two hosts on the internet, A and B, and here's our internet here, transport layer is an end-to-end protocol in that it's dealing with the communications between this host and this host. The intermediate devices, the switches, the routers, the access points, have no role in the transport protocol. They do not participate in any of the actions. And so it's end-to-end. It's from one host to one host. So on this computer, we have some applications like a web browser and a web server running, some software running. The transport protocol allows that application to deliver data to this application, to the destination application on computer B. TCP is used to provide reliability. The other alternative, or the main other alternative, is UDP, which provides a very basic service. So TCP provides a reliable, stream-oriented transport service. The service it provides is reliability. Stream-oriented means that when your application wants to send data from, say, our web browser to a web server, if we use them as the example applications, if we want to send data, in fact, let's go the other way. We want to send data from a web server to a web browser. We've accessed a web page. The server is trying to send that web page to your web browser so you can view it. Then it would use TCP to transfer that data. If that data is a web page, which is 10,000 bytes in size, then TCP as a stream-oriented service doesn't care about what those bytes represent. It just treats them as a stream of continuous bytes. And what it may do is break those 10,000 bytes, that one web page, into multiple TCP segments. And they may be of different sizes. For example, that 10,000 byte web page may be broken into three TCP segments of 1,000 bytes, 1,000 bytes, and 8,000 bytes. How it divides it up depends on many different factors. Just an example. And sends those segments across the internet to our destination. The receiving TCP entity will receive those segments and deliver the data inside them to the application here. The stream of data that flows from one entity to another, is unstructured. That is, in this instance, it could be split into 1,000, 1,000, 8,000. In another instance, it could be split differently. TCP doesn't care about any structure inside this data. It just treats it as bytes. TCP is connection-oriented. Before we transfer any data, we set up a connection. We won't go through the details of how that works. Some of you will have seen that. Basically, if I want to communicate with someone, exchange data with TCP, there's a three-way handshake to establish a connection. Send a special synchronized message, receive an acknowledgement back, and then a third acknowledgement back. That's establishing the connection, just agreeing upon some parameters, especially sequence numbers. Once we establish a connection, we can transfer data in either direction. So we establish a connection from one endpoint, but once it's connected, send to B, B can send to A in that same connection. So it's a connection-oriented protocol. It's a full duplex connection. As I said, you can send data in both directions once it's connected. Provides reliability. I send one TCP segment from B to A. A may send back an acknowledgement saying, thank you, I've received that segment, and I expect to receive more. So it uses acknowledgements or positive acknowledgements. And if we don't receive an acknowledgement when we expect one, then there may be retransmissions. B sends a segment to A. There's an error somewhere in the internet. The segment doesn't get delivered to A. B is waiting for an acknowledgement, waiting for an act to come back. And after some time out, that is, it's waited long enough, it may retransmit that same segment, and hopefully it gets the internet successfully in the second occurrence. So there's this retransmission scheme to provide reliability. We've skipped over one, buffered transfer. Applications generate any size messages. In my example here, the application was the web server. The message it generated was this 10,000 bytes. TCP may buffer those messages until a single large datagram is formed. Let's consider a different example. We have our application. And what happens is that every time you press a key on the keyboard, the application wants to send data about that key to the other application. We've got a remote login type application. I type something on my computer here, and whatever I type in is sent to the destination computer. So, I press one key, the application generates a small amount of data, let's say 10 bytes, which is just some data representing the key that I pressed. And that 10 bytes is sent or placed in some buffer. For TCP. And as the application sends the 10 bytes representing that key press to TCP, and TCP places that in some buffer, some space in memory. TCP may decide to send that as one segment across the internet. A segment with a TCP header and the 10 bytes of data. That's one approach. Whenever we press the key, the application generates 10 bytes of data, sends it to TCP in the operating system. TCP creates a segment and sends it across the internet. It's received and then sent up to the application. But sometimes TCP may decide not to do that because in this case, it's sending very small segments. And that can be inefficient. To send a small 10 byte of data plus a segment with a header of, say, 20 bytes, can be inefficient. So what TCP may decide to do is wait for more data to come from the application. So sometime later I press another key. Let's say 1 second later I press another key on the keyboard and the application generates another 10 bytes of data. That's placed in the buffer. And then I keep pressing keys, typing in data, generating application data, sending it to TCP. Another 10 bytes placed in a buffer. TCP may then decide, okay, we have enough data to send, to efficiently send to the other side. Let's create one TCP segment with a header. And put all of that data inside that segment. All 40 bytes in this example. Send that one TCP segment to the So this is what, well, this is an example of buffered transfer. There's no guarantee that when the application generates data that it will be immediately sent across the internet. It may wait inside memory in your computer for some time before it's eventually sent. Once it's received, on the other side, that segment, then the receiver puts the received data, this 40 bytes, in a buffer, a receive buffer. And when this application at the destination is ready, it may read from this buffer. And it may read certain number of bytes at a time, or it may read everything that's in the buffer. So it will receive that data, the application that is. This is communications inside the computer. This is TCP, this is the application. It's just communication between two processes inside a computer. So this is actually also an example of using stream-oriented transfer. TCP doesn't care that this represents four key presses. From TCP's perspective, it's just 40 bytes of data. In some cases, it may send it as four segments, in some cases as one segment, in some cases as two segments. We cannot guarantee which one it will choose. It depends upon the implementation. That's not very good in some cases, because what might happen, every time I type a key on this computer, it places the data into the buffer. If TCP waits until a certain amount of data is in the buffer before it sends, then we don't have very good interactivity between the two computers, because there's some delay from when I press the key at this computer until when that data is received at this application. So, in fact, there is an option to push or force the data transmission. When you send data from the application to TCP, tell TCP to immediately send that data across the internet. So there is an option to force TCP to send that 10 bytes immediately. Without using that option, it's up to TCP to decide how many bytes to send at once. If you capture packets with Wireshark, you'll see different flags, and we'll see shortly different flags, and one of them is a push flag that indicates to force the transfer of this data. So that's some of the basic capabilities of TCP. We're going to go through some in a bit more detail. But first, let's look at the header segment, or the segment. Seems hard. Here's the structure of the TCP segment. We have a header and data. The header has, by default, 20 bytes. And then it has some optional fields. So normally there are no options, or we'll assume that by default there are no options, but there are, and then we have the data. So the header is 20 bytes. The options must be padded out to be multiples of 4 bytes. So this is showing each row indicates 4 bytes, 32 bits. So the first field in the header is the source port number. When we communicate between applications, we use port numbers to identify those applications. So my web server will be using port number 80, for example. And my web browser may be using a different port number, usually a higher port number. Those port numbers identify those applications on the computer, and they are inside the TCP header as the source port and the destination port. And they are 16 bits in length, 2 bytes, so allowing port numbers up to 65,000. We carry a sequence number and an acknowledgement number. The sequence number indicates the first byte of data in the sequence of data transferred in this connection. If we have our 10,000 bytes, we can think of, and we split that 10,000 bytes into 4 segments. TCP creates 4 segments. We can think that in this first segment, the first byte
is byte number one, therefore has sequence number one. Or this segment in the header, the sequence number has a value one. In the second segment that's sent, if this was byte number one, the last byte in here would be byte number 1000. Therefore, if we continue on, the next byte here would be 1001. So the sequence number field in this segment would be 1001. And in this one, it would be what? The sequence number of the third segment is 1001. The first segment had sequence number 1. Any of you three can answer. The second segment had sequence number 1001. The second segment has 1,000 bytes. So the third segment has sequence number 2001. Because we're simply counting bytes of data. Three segments each have a sequence number field, which is indicating the sequence of bytes in the total set of data. So the number depends upon the size of the data in each segment. Now, we don't have to start at sequence number one. When we start the connection, one thing that we do in the connection establishment, this three-way handshake, is we agree upon initial sequence numbers. If I say the initial sequence number is 0, then I'll start at number 1. If I say the initial sequence number is 10,000, then the first sequence number here would be 10,001. So it's relative to what we agree upon at the start of the connection. But then for the duration of the connection, we simply count bytes. So that's how sequence numbers are used in TCP. The acknowledgement number is to indicate, when we send an acknowledgement back, what is the next sequence number we expect to receive. So with this example, if we send the first segment from B to A, the first segment had sequence number 1. It had 1,000 bytes of data. When A receives that, A sends back an acknowledgement. And the acknowledgement number, the ACK that comes back, will be what value? What's the value of the ACK number? We've just received the first segment, starting at sequence number 1. It contained 1,000 bytes. The acknowledgement number that comes back will have what value? 1,001. The acknowledgement indicates what is the next sequence number we expect to receive. We've just received sequence number 1 up to 1,000, because there are 1,000 bytes. If we label them, there'll be byte 1, byte 2, byte 3, byte 999, byte 1,000. We receive that successfully. We send back an ACK with the ACK number saying, thank you, I've received up until 1,000. I now expect to receive 1,001. We receive then sometime later, B sends the second segment, which starts from 1001 and goes to 2000. We send back another ACK 2001, and so on. So this is how the acknowledgements work. Sequence numbers count bytes. The acknowledgement number indicates the next byte we expect to receive in the sequence. Now, in TCP, there's only one type of segment. There's no special type of segments for data and ACKs. It's all just one TCP segment. So in fact, when we send this data, the ACK that comes back is just another TCP segment, structured as shown up here. Except that for an acknowledgement, there's of course a value in the acknowledgement number field, And one of our flags, they're not all shown here, they're on the next slide, one of the flags, which is the ACK flag or acknowledgement flag, is set to 1, indicating this segment contains an acknowledgement. Some of the other fields, header length, just to indicate how long is the header, especially if we have options. Normally it's 20 bytes, but if we have options, it may be a variable size. Flags to indicate the meaning of this specific segment. A checksum to check for errors in the segment. Urgent pointer is to indicate that some data should be delivered immediately to the application. And another thing is the window, and that's going to be important when we look at flow control. So remember, we have a 16-bit window field. This just lists those fields, and perhaps the most important one is that there's a set of flags, and all the flag is a 1-bit value. It's either on or off. 0, the flag is off. 1, it's on. And in the TCP segment, the flags indicate different meanings of the segment. For example, one of the flags is ACK. If this flag is set, or if it's on, then it means this particular segment contains an acknowledgement. If it's off, it does not contain an ACK. There are some for setting up a connection. When we establish a connection, we use the synchronized flag. When we finish a connection, we use the fin flag. This push flag was this example of, we want the data to be transferred, then we use the push flag, and several others. We may see some of these in use once we get to congestion control. So there are flags, and note that there's only one type of TCP packet. The different meaning of those is indicated by the flags. We can have data inside our packet, but that packet can also be an acknowledgement. That is, we send our first segment from B to A. A wants to send back an acknowledgement, but if it also wants to send data to B, then we can send one TCP segment, which contains the data, it has the ACK flag set, and the acknowledgement number equal to 1001. And this is the concept of piggybacking, sometimes referred, where we send data in this direction. With that data, we also include the acknowledgement. Instead of sending two separate segments, we send just the one segment, having two meanings. So that's the structure of the TCP segment. We may refer to that segment structure later, at various times. Some other features, we've said we can establish a connection, initialize the sequence numbers for data transfer. Once we've finished our data transfer, we tear down or disconnect. We have reliability, and the reliability uses acknowledgements, positive acknowledgements, and retransmissions. So the aim is to ensure that all data is delivered intact in order to the receiver. If I send three segments representing 10,000 bytes, then all of those need to be received and received in order. They all need to be received, and the receiver needs to know about the order of that data so that it can put that data back together. It receives three segments. It needs to know that this is the first segment, the second, and the third, so it can join them to establish the original 10,000 bytes. If we lose one segment, we send three, one doesn't get to the destination, then that's when we need our reliability mechanisms, the retransmission schemes. We may have to retransmit this one segment until it's received. There are some different variations of the retransmission scheme. We're not going to go into the details of them, that try to improve upon performance. And the other two mechanisms, and that's what we're going to go through in a bit more depth in this lecture, flow control and congestion control. The aim of these mechanisms, flow control, we have a sender on the internet, a sending computer, which has some capabilities, that is the CPU has a particular speed, a particular amount of memory, the link bandwidth is a particular rate, and the receiver may have different capabilities. Maybe it's an older computer, limited amount of memory, and a very slow receiving link. The flow control, the aim is to ensure that the sender doesn't overflow the receiver, doesn't send too fast for the receiver. And the way that is by using buffer. If we're sending data to the receiver, we have some buffer that as we receive data, we can save it in memory, in a buffer. If that buffer fills up, then if we receive any more data, we cannot save that in memory and we'll have to lose or discard that data. We lose that data. So if we received, let's draw a diagram to illustrate it. Let's say this represents our buffer and each block here represents 1,000 bytes, that at some point in time, so this is just memory in our receiving computer, at this point in time we have 4,000 bytes used of the buffer, of the memory. We have a total of, 11,000 bytes available, 4,000 are in use at this point in time, because we've received some data. The application here has not consumed that data. It has not taken the data out of the buffer. What happens, TCP delivers the data, it's saved in the buffer. When the application at the receiver is ready, it will take the data out of the buffer. So at some point in time, maybe the application reads the buffer and removes a portion of that data. Let's just say, for an example, two of those blocks. It reads 2,000 bytes. It depends on what the application is doing as to how much it's going to read and when it's going to read that. So now, in the buffer, the TCP buffer, there are 2,000 bytes in use out of the 11,000 bytes. What we don't want to happen is to have the buffer to be fully utilized and then receive more data. So what TCP does is that when it sends back acknowledgements, in the TCP segment there was a window field. This window field indicates how much space do we have available in our buffer. So it gives a number saying, in this case representing we have 11,000 byte total size of buffer, we have 2,000 in use. The window is 9,000, meaning 9,000 bytes. It tells the sender, you can send me another 9,000 bytes of data. If you cannot send more than 9,000, because if you do more than 9,000, you'll overflow my buffer, because I'll have 2 plus the 9 plus the extra that you send, and I'll not be able to save that in my memory. So in the TCP segments that come back, we use the window field in the AX, the window field to indicate how much available buffer space do we have. Send that back sometime later, the sender sends 5,000 bytes. It's allowed 9,000. It may not have 9,000 to send. Let's say it sends 5,000 bytes. That'd be received, placed in the buffer. And when we send our ACK back, we'll have the window field of what? When we send the ACK back, the window field will be Our total size is 11,000 bytes. We had 2,000 bytes used. We just received another 5,000 bytes. So in fact, we have 7,000 bytes used. What's the window field that we send back? 4,000. The window field indicates the available buffer space. We have this 4,000 bytes, 4K bytes, available at this point in time. So we send back in our ACK with the window field equal to 4,000. It's just informing the sender how much you're allowed to send, or the maximum you're allowed to send, such that you don't overflow the receiver. Because remember, that's the aim. Ensure the sender does not overflow the receiver. Then maybe the application at the receiver accesses the data in the buffer again. It reads another 3,000 bytes. So that removes 3,000 bytes, and now we have 7,000 bytes available. We can either send a specific frame saying the window is now 7,000, or we can wait until we receive more data and send an ACK. So over time, this keeps changing. The window for flow control indicates the amount of space available in the buffer. And that limits the amount that the sender can send. The sender is not allowed to send any more than that window. And in fact, we'll call this the advertised window, because the receiver is advertising how much buffer space it has available. We'll see that there are different types of windows used later. So that's the basics of flow control. The advertised window indicates the available buffer space at this point in time. Of course, it changes over time. It changes. The advertised window decreases as we receive data and put it in the buffer. It increases as the application extracts data from the buffer. And how it actually changes depends a lot on what the application is and what it's doing. Any questions upon flow control? We're not going to go through in much more detail. It's just that concept that we need to be clear of. And that's important, because when we look at the other more complex concept of congestion control, it's somehow related. So here's a limit on our performance. If we had no limit, that is, if we did not limit the rate at which the sender could send, the sender just sends data as fast as possible. The sender has 1 megabyte to send. Just keep sending segments. Let's say 1,000 byte segments. Keep sending them as fast as possible. If we did not have flow control, then eventually the receiver may be overflowed, especially if the receiver was slower than the sender. If the sender could send, let's say, 10 megabits per second, the receiver, because it's a slow computer with a slow link, can only receive and process at, say, 5 megabits per second, then eventually it's going to be putting data in the buffer will fill up, and then the next piece of data that arrives will be discarded or lost. We'll lose that data, and that's bad. Therefore, what we do, inform how fast you can send by indicating the maximum amount of data you're allowed to send. The last, the main feature we're going to go through is congestion control. I think some of you, or most of you, we've studied flow control before. We've talked about basic mechanisms of stop and wait flow control, the sliding window flow control. This is a sliding window mechanism. That is, the amount at which the sender is allowed to send changes over time. We have this window saying how much we're allowed to send. We've seen the concepts before. This is just a specific instance of a concept of flow control for TCP. What we haven't talked about before is congestion control. And the aim here is different. Flow control, do not overflow the receiver. Congestion control, do not overflow the network. This part. Flow control, control the speed at which A sends such that B is not overflowed. That's flow control. Congestion control, control the speed at which A sends such that the internet is not overflowed. And by the internet, we're really talking about the routers along that path. Because if we send too fast, and everyone else sends too fast, those routers, that is the network or the internet, will be overflowed, and again, we'll start to lose packets. So we're going to spend a fair bit of time explaining congestion and how TCP tries to avoid it. First, looking at what causes congestion in the internet. So a simple explanation of what is congestion. If we look at congestion in a network occurs when the number of packets being sent into that network approaches the capacity of that network. The number of, remember on this internet we have multiple hosts transmitting, not just this one host. But there may be many others attached as well sending. We can think of those hosts sending packets onto the internet. That internet is made up of links and routers that have a particular capacity. Those links can only handle transferring data at a particular speed. Those routers only have a particular forwarding speed and a particular amount of buffer space. That indicates the capacity of the internet. The speed at which you can deliver packets through it. If we start sending at a rate which approaches the capacity or exceeds the capacity, then we'll get congestion. Of course, the questions that then arise are, well, what is the packet handling capacity of the network? What is the capacity of a network? And that's not easy to determine. And then the question, if we know the capacity, what happens when we approach the capacity? What happens when we have congestion? We need to try and address those questions. The aim of, so if that's congestion, we'll see what one of the things that happens is we start to lose packets and the performance degrades. That's a bad thing. Therefore, we'd like congestion control. Try to keep the number of packets that we send below some level before which the performance falls off or drops dramatically. That is, if the capacity of my network was 100, and if I start to send, if congestion occurs when I'm sending at a rate of 80, whatever units we use, then congestion control would try to keep the sending rate such that we do not exceed 80. Because once we exceed that rate, we'll start to get congestion in the internet. We want to avoid congestion. But we need to know what are the mechanisms for doing this. How do we keep the number of packets sent below a particular level? And we'll see that's where TCP comes in. Because TCP has a mechanism that controls the speed at which the computers send packets, controls the rate at which packets come into the network. So congestion is caused when too many computers, source computers, try to send data at too high a speed, too high a rate. In the internet, that typically results in routers dropping packets. If everyone's trying to send as fast as possible, the routers become overloaded. The routers have buffers, and once those buffers are filled up, they will drop packets. No, for TCP, if we send three segments and one of those is lost, lost because one of the routers and the internet dropped it, then TCP will try to retransmit. That's the basic mechanism of TCP. Retransmit if you lose packets. But retransmissions are bad because A, it means another packet is sent across the network, and B, it results in extra delay. So in fact, in the internet, if we start to drop packets at routers, TCP tries to send more. It will retransmit more packets. Those retransmissions can cause more congestion because, in fact, more packets are being sent, and therefore the routers drop more packets, and therefore TCP retransmits more, causing more congestion, causing more packet lots, more retransmissions, until the network fails. That is, everything is just a retransmission of a retransmission of a retransmission. There's no original data being sent through the network. Nothing is being delivered to the destination, and we'll say we have the network collapses or we have congestion collapse. That's why we need congestion control, to try to prevent this, to control the rate at which the sources send. So without congestion control, the internet would have collapsed. That is, we would not have been able to deliver data across the internet a long time ago. But TCP has congestion control to avoid this situation. Let's look at just some basics of how congestion occurs at routers. Using some very simple scenarios to illustrate the concepts and how it impacts on performance. Here's an example where we have one router and we have two source hosts and two destination hosts. So A is sending data to D and B is sending data to C. And they are sending data via that one shared router, which has a single link here. Let's say the router outgoing link, this one, we're looking, data's going in this direction, this link has a capacity R, some variable R. Host A sends packets to the router at some input rate, lambda in. Let's say the sending rate, the speed at which it's sending packets, is lambda in, bytes per second. And so does host B. And let's say we have, in theory, a router with infinite memory. It has an infinite buffer space. That is, as packets arrive, it can store as many as it likes in memory before it sends them on. Lambda out will denote as a throughput of the connection, the rate at which we deliver packets to the destination. That's what we're interested in. We want to get a maximum throughput. We also want to give minimum delay. Let's draw what happens, or make note of those concepts. Sending rate in this example of the two hosts, so the sending rate of one host is denoted as lambda in. The throughput, the thing that we're interested in, that is the rate at which the data is successfully delivered to the destination, will denote as lambda out. This is the rate at which data is coming into the router. Lambda out is the rate at which it's coming out. And the capacity of the output link is R. That's this link here. That's the maximum speed at which the router can send. Of course, the throughput is not going to be larger than the capacity. We cannot send faster than the capacity. And the other thing that we said is the buffer size of the router is infinite, just for this case. This illustrates the basic concepts of the performance under this scenario. It's a plot of the throughput here and the delay. As the input rate increases, the input rate of an individual host. So what we can see here is if my input rate is, let's give them some numbers, if my input rate, if my capacity was 1 megabit per second, my input rate was 10 kilobits per second, then my output rate would be 10 kilobits per second. My capacity, the maximum speed at which the router can send is 1 megabit per second. If my source computer A is sending at 10 kilobits per second, and so is B, then what's arriving at the router is a total of 20 kilobits per second. What can the router send? Well, the maximum it can send is 1 megabit per second. Let's all use the same units, 1,000 kilobits per second. It's 1 megabit per second. The maximum the router can send is 1,000. Therefore, if 20 is coming in, it can easily send 20 out. So we say the total coming out of the router is 20 kilobits per second. For each source, the throughput is identical to the sending rate. I'm sending 10 kilobits per second. We had host D and C here. This one's receiving 10 kilobits per second. So is this one. Sending at 10, receiving at 10. In is 10, out is 10 for both hosts. Let's say at this point, when the input rate is low, the output rate will be identical to the input. We increase this to 100 kilobits per second. We can see we'll have 100 here, 100 here, 200. The capacity here is 1,000, so we can still send 200 through. Again, the throughput will be the same as the sending rate. We have a linear increase. As we increase our sending rate, we increase our throughput. Until we get to this point, this is the point where the sending rate is R divided by 2. So let's give them numbers. R divided by 2 in our case is 500 kilobits per second. Computer A is sending at 500 kilobits per second. Computer B at 500. The total coming into the router is 1,000. The total that can come out of the router is 1,000. And therefore 500 will be delivered to D and 500 to C. So at that point, again, R divided by 2 is the input rate, R divided by 2 is the throughput, the output. But if we increase further to 600, we'll see that we have 600 being sent from each of the hosts, a total of 1,200 coming into the router, only 1,000 coming out. Because we've reached the capacity of that output link. That's a simple concept there. We cannot send faster than 1,000 out. The The link speed here is 1,000. Even if we're sending 1,200 in, 1,000 comes out. So the throughput for DNC is still 500 kilobits per second. And that's what this is showing. As we increase the sending rate, we'll reach a limit of the throughput here, which will be fixed at R divided by 2, or in our case, 500 kilobits per second per host. So that would continue forever. That's okay, and that's what we'd expect, and we cannot go any better than that. We don't expect to be able to get a throughput greater than the capacity divided by the number of hosts. But let's look at delay. The delay occurs because of delay at the router. What's happening here? We're sending 1,200 packets into the router. Only 1,000 are coming out. The router has a buffer. And in fact, in our case, the buffer, in this case, the buffer size is infinite. So what happens? Every unit of time 1,200 come in are stored in the buffer. Of those 1,200, 1,000 come out. So 200 remain in the buffer. Then, another time unit later, because we're continuously sending data, another 1,200 packets come in, only 1,000 come out. As a result, there'll be an extra 200 packets in the buffer. Kilobits. Kilobits. I'm talking about kilobits per second. 1,200 kilobits per second coming in, 1,000 kilobits per second coming out. Every time we send 1,200 in, there'll be 200 kilobits stored in the buffer because it doesn't get to be sent. It has to wait until the next time unit. This data in the buffer is being delayed. And as we keep sending, we can see that the data stored in the buffer is just going to continue to increase. If we send 1,200 in, say, every second, and send 1,000 out every second, every 1 second, the buffer size will increase by 200 kilobits. If we keep doing that, it will increase by another 200, and forever. We set our buffer size as infinite, so over time, just keep growing in size. Each packet, or each bit in here, is delayed. Because when does this get to be sent? When the next iteration we're allowed to send. When is the packet or the bits here allowed to be sent? After all of these bits have been sent from the buffer. So the larger the buffer size, or the larger the utilization of the buffer, the more bits in the buffer, the larger the delay. And that's what's showing here. As we increase our sending rate, with our throughput, we had a linear increase in the throughput as we increased the sending rate up until the point where we reached capacity. And then we flatten out. But with the delay, as we increase the sending rate in, we'll have some packets have to be buffered, causing small delay. In general, as we approach the capacity, the delay, the utilization of the buffer goes up and the delay of the packets goes up. And it will approach infinity in this ideal scenario. This is good performance from throughput perspective. This is a problem. Because even though we can send at capacity here, we get a delay of a very high delay. We want a good throughput and a low delay. Now this is in a simple scenario. Let's consider the second scenario, which adds a little bit more reality to it. What happens if our buffer size is not infinite, but it's fixed? If the buffer size was infinite, we could keep storing packets in the buffer. Our buffer delay would increase, but we can keep storing packets in the buffer. But if the buffer size is fixed, once the buffer is full, and then another packet arrives, we're going to lose some data because where do we put it? If the buffer is full, we receive a packet. We cannot save it in memory because the memory is full. We must discard that packet or data. That's when we lose packets. So the next scenario considers same network topology, but we now have a router with finite buffers, not infinite. It's a limited size buffer. So what's going to happen in the same case if we're sending it 600 and 600 and 1200 in, 1000 coming out, 200 kilobits are going to go into the buffer each second. Over time, the buffer will eventually fill up because each second there's an extra 200 going in there. It'll eventually fill up. Once it's full, the next 200 that come in will be dropped because we've got nowhere to put them. That results in packet loss. What do we do when we lose packets? TCP, our host, will eventually retransmit. So if we lose packets, our host will eventually retransmit, try to get them through again. So we lost packets in this case, which lead to retransmissions. We introduce a new concept here. We have lambda in is the original data being sent, but there's also some retransmissions, that is, retransmissions of that original data. And we know lambda prime in as the original data plus the retransmitted data. And without going into the mathematics or an example, the end result looks closer to this. Before we had, this is our throughput. Before we saw throughput going linearly up to here and then flatten out. But if we have finite buffers, the throughput, because we have to retransmit some packets, will be reduced. The amount it's reduced depends on how many we have to retransmit. So this is illustrating that if every second packet is lost, that is, we have to send three packets to deliver two original packets, because there's two original packets and one retransmission, a total of three are sent, then only two-thirds of those are successfully received. We send one, it gets there. We send the next one, it's lost. We retransmit that one, it gets there. Two of the three are received. We're sending three, we're receiving two. We get two-thirds of the throughput. And we see that instead of approaching a half, or R over 2, we in fact get only two-thirds of that, R over 3. So that's, in reality, with finite buffers, the throughput is decreased. It can get worse in practice. In some cases, we may time out. That is, we send our packet, we're waiting for an ACK, it's not going to come, or it doesn't come in time because there's a large delay, we retransmit. But if we retransmit when we didn't have to retransmit, we may cause more packets to be sent across the network. And we can do some analysis and see that, in fact, the throughput goes down even further. The main point here is that as we start to approach the capacity of the network, in this example, the capacity was here. As we start to approach, our sending rate starts to approach the capacity, then our throughput will not reach the capacity. It will go down. And I think we've got one more last scenario, which is more complex. We won't go through it, but if we have multiple hosts, multiple routers, and try to extend that analysis to more realistic scenarios, then the throughput can look like this. This is the sending rate, the amount of packets we're sending into our network. This is the throughput, the amount of packets that are being delivered to the destination successfully. We increase our sending rate, everything's going fine. Our throughput's increasing. It's increasing until we approach some point And we have to start to retransmit packets because packets are being dropped by the routers because the buffer is full. When we drop packets, they are lost. The source will retransmit. Retransmissions cause more packets to be sent in the network. So we start to send more and the throughput drops off because we spend a lot of time retransmitting, little time delivering original data to the destination. And if we increase our sending rate, eventually that throughput can drop down to zero. That means we spend all of our time simply retransmitting packets, no time sending original new data. And the throughput becomes zero, and that's when the network collapses. We spend all the time sending old data, no time spending new data. And that's bad. So, this is the point, or the main point to take from this. Increasing the sending rate up to some point is okay, but once we approach this capacity point, once we approach the sending rate at this point, the throughput and the performance drops off rapidly. Therefore, what we want is congestion control such that we do not exceed this point. Limit our sending rate to within this range, somewhere up to here. Because if we allow the sending rate to go up to here, the performance is going to drop down. And that's what we'll see, that TCP has congestion control to control the sending rate so that we try to keep it lower than this point. So we can summarize as to, well, what are the costs of congestion? If we have many people sending too fast for the network, what happens? We get large queuing delays. This delay experienced by packets in this router buffer is queuing delay. If you go back to our initial study of data communication networks, we had four types of delay: transmission, propagation, processing delay, and queuing delay. This is queuing delay because the packets are arrived, put in a buffer, they queue up, and they experience delay. As the sending rate approaches the output link capacity of a router, the queuing delay increases. As our sending rate in approaches this, 1000, the queuing delay will increase. We want to minimize delay. A sender must perform retransmissions to compensate for lost packets if the buffer overflows. We may need to send unneeded copies of packets if we retransmit too early. And as we introduce multiple routers into a network, a more realistic network compared to the scenarios we considered, then if a packet is dropped by a router, then all links that have been utilized to send that packet have been wasted. So, we have problems. If we do not control the sending rate, we will get congestion, low throughput, and increased delay. Hence, we need some approaches to control congestion. And we'll go through them after the break. So we'll stop there, and this afternoon we'll look at how do we control congestion? How do we avoid these problems that we just spoke about? So the main point to take away from what we've covered so far is that if we don't control the speed at which we send, congestion occurs inside the internet. And by inside the internet, I mean the routers, because the buffers of the routers are fixed, are finite. They start to overflow and we start to drop packets. As we drop packets, retransmissions occur, which may result in more drop packets, larger delay, lower throughput. We want to avoid that. So enough for this morning. Let's continue this afternoon. Just sign your names before you leave.